Hey, this is Tommy Mello, CEO of A1 Garage Door Service, author of The Home Service Millionaire, consultant, speaker, and host of the Home Service Expert Podcast. I have successfully taken my business to generating millions of revenue each year and helped other service-based business owners do the same. If you want to learn how to successfully transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show. On this guest episode, I have with me Tommy Mello. If you don't know who he is, my guess, I don't say this very often, but you should, especially if you're in home services. He is the CEO of A1 Garage Door Service, which has grown into much more than just that. He is the author of the book, The Home Service Millionaire, about how he turned his garage door service business from $50,000 in debt to over $30 million in business in 7 years, and then has just kept going, right? That's where the book stopped. He's now working on another one. He's the host of the Home Service Expert Podcast. He's a trainer. He's a consultant. He's a keynote speaker. And all of this in the framework of what he's doing for businesses. And he's joined me to chat about sales, leadership, service-based businesses, where they struggle, how they can succeed. Tommy, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Jason, pleasure. I'm really excited to be here. Me and you got a lot in common. We jive well. It's going to be great.
I appreciate that. I agree. I told you this a little bit before we hit start and I was preparing for this. Our podcast, me as a guest on your podcast, which was kind of weird, right? So yours is the Home Service Expert Podcast. Here's me, a telephone call center kind of consultant, salesperson, and leader in the past. Not the best fit, but I've had clients in home services. I understand it. Sales is sales. You had me on, and it was one of the most memorable experiences as a guest, because what I loved about you, which is something I tell everyone to do, is you were just ultra curious. If anyone saw the video of that, all you were doing was taking notes, connecting dots. You were just going through pages of notes and just so curious. And I know that I know that I know that's one of the things that's made you successful to the point where you're at, is that curiosity. Because when I see that in somebody, I just know that they've got it. So that's why I'm excited to have you here, because I just love for you to share kind of what you've collected in all of that.
Yeah, no, it's great. I think I try to be the dumbest guy in the room, and I try to put myself in the right places at the right time, meaning that I describe it like this. You need to stop the boat if it's completely sinking. But most people believe that they need to wait till everything's perfect to make a decision. And I'm like, as long as that boat, you're always going to have a hole. Your goal as a CEO or a manager or a COO or president or vice president is to find the biggest holes and patch those first. So getting in front of the right people, and that's why having a podcast for me, getting professionals, awesome badasses on that know their stuff in the areas that I need help in, and I can take notes and I can apply them to my business, and it's the ultimate advantage. And I never knew that the podcast would, now we're up to 30,000 downloads a month. I get emails and letters and text messages and Facebook messages like by the dozens every single week. And it's just, it's nuts. And it means a lot to me to be helping people out. So I appreciate being on, and hopefully this podcast we're about to do helps somebody out there, because if I could give back and you could give back, we're doing the right thing. And it's Christmas, so it's the time of giving.
And I think that's fascinating, because even just this morning, I had a phone call with somebody and she wants to write a book and she wants to make like a planner kind of scheduler thing for herself. And the ones that she buys doesn't work. So she wants to solve her own problem. She's like, I know when I make this, it's going to make me happy and other people want it. Like literally, as you're talking about your own podcast, you're solving your problem. Like you said, which I love, which is opposite of what other people do, which is being the dumbest person in the room to learn from everybody instead of trying to be the smartest person and trying to show everyone how smart you are. You did your podcast to help you, right? It's selfish. Like, I want to learn all this stuff. Oh, by the way, I'll let you guys listen in, but I really don't care. Like, this is about the value and what you get out of it, which then turns around. The intention is totally different, because it's not about proving how smart you are. It's about just collecting this info and sharing it.
people listen to my podcast are like, dude, you really nailed it out with that question. I'm like, yeah, because I want to know. I'm sitting here with the same problems you guys have. I'm sitting here living the fight. And it's great because people are like, dude, you're just on point a lot. And I'm like, because it's a business and it's, we're all in the home service space. Then I have a lot of realtors and other people that contact me that are like, we love the fact because most of your stuff, whether it comes to motivation, recruiting, hiring, orienting, training, maintaining, I'm a big fan of marketing and sales. Those are my two favorite. But what I've learned to switch it on is I've taken the marketing and sales and said, how do I market and sell to future employees? And how do I get in front and build a stack the deck with A players? Because I always say 1A equals 3B. And so many people are chasing after customers or clients, and so many people are letting their top talent go and getting another person. And it's alarming to me. And COVID has taught me, like, cherish what you have. No one walked out on me. Everybody stuck by our side. We did good as a team. The leadership team did amazing. And I knew we had something when everybody's like, dude, I had guy after guy after guy of my technicians and CSRs, gal after gal, and guys in the CSR department. Everybody walked in and they said, look, we're willing to cut our pay. They were giving their days, their sick time away to other people. They were giving their PTO away to help people in need. And I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. They're literally doing whatever they could to band together to make us rise up amongst all the bad stuff. And we come out of this thing unscathed. And I'm not bragging by any means. More importantly, really, really proud of my team for the way that they handled it. We communicated every day with an email. And it meant a lot to me to see how people reacted in a time of need. And they rose to the occasion and fought. And we won the battle, I feel like.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think everyone stuck together? Why do you think people volunteered to sacrifice on their end to help the collective group?
I can't speak for everybody, but they see that I've worked really, really hard. I won't say I've worked hard to build a culture, but I thought about, what is our culture missing? What don't we have? Do we have enough fun times? Do we care about that next level? What's with them? What's in it for me? But I always say, can we flip that on its head and say, what can we do for other people? What can we do for them? So I've got Big Buck Hunter, my favorite game in there. Everybody's always playing. It's the hunting game. We've got Golden Tee. We've got pinball. We've got a basketball. I was here with two guys playing basketball on Saturday. We've got ping pong. We've got bags. And the games keep going. We've got an arcade game with 1,000 different games. We've got the original Nintendo, the original Sega. I mean,
nice.
I'm a gamer, and I just want to have fun. So we did the Secret Santa, and I mean, there's gifts. Even when we've been sitting here, the guy brought me, I don't know what we got here, but they're everywhere. And it's fun. It's a good time, and we're very fortunate. One of the things we do here at A1 is we do a lot of charity work. So the guys come in to train. We've got a group of 30 guys here. We did Shop with a Cop. We donated $10,000, and I don't care about what we donated. The fact is that we got to go with them and help kids that didn't get a Christmas to shop for presents with a police officer in Scottsdale two different times. One day was with middle schools and teenagers in high school. The other one with kids under in elementary school. Elementary school was so much fun. Because I'm not a dad yet. I want to be. And I'm sitting there tying the girl's shoes and like, go run around, see if those shoes. And they were like $10. I'm like, to be a kid again. But then we fed the kids. And then we just got done with the Salvation Army this week. And so volunteering time, money's great. I mean, if you could volunteer and give money. But a lot of people miss the piece of the actually giving of time. I think that that's really built the culture. Like, hey, we're here to give. A lot of people talk about giving. But I just really like the fact that when you come work for us, you're going to do it because we're paying you to do it. And hopefully you have a new look at what charity is really about.
And the thing that you didn't focus on, which I know that you do, but obviously, you know, you're not going to come on here and just beat your own chest and talk about necessarily, is that you have built a very strong corporate culture around a vision and a mission and the core values. You were telling me before we started that you're hiring. There it is right there. If anyone saw it on video, you bring people in, you have them in your corporate location for a month while they train before they go back out there. You're doing parties, you're doing events, you're doing barbecues, you're doing all kinds of culture building, family building things, and treating it more like that family, where as a family, when times get tough, you know, the family bands together, a healthy family that's going in the same direction, which is basically what you've built.
Yeah, I think I got to 5 million pretty easily myself. And I got to say, we didn't have a culture back then. And I was more beating my chest back then. I was like, yeah, look what I built. And then I noticed that that's about, I hit a glass ceiling and I needed someone else. It's kind of funny because I got Adam in 2014. And there's a good book called Rocket Fuel. So my name's Tommy. Adam is Adam. So I call it the TNA show. We read the book Rocket Fuel, and I realized I'm the visionary. He's the integrator. And then from there on, we started getting another one, another one, another one that has skin in the game that cares. When I'm not here, the company functions just as well as when I'm here, if not better, because I'm always pushing for new things. So operationally, it probably gets better because I'm so busy pushing the gas, saying faster, faster, more markets, more people. Why aren't we hiring? We missed our quota on this. I love visual management throughout the whole building. I'm actually hiring a senior data analyst to break down every single key performance indicator for each and every group. This is a book we're reading right now as a team. It's for discipline of execution. Obviously, right now we're reading a bunch. We're reading The Sales Boss with my field supervisors. And instead of saying, read this part of the book, here's a little secret. Don't have your team read a part of the book and come to the book club because half of them didn't read it. So get it on Audible, listen to it at a decent pace that everybody could listen to. Some people might not be as good a reader. I mean, I love to read. You can see my bookshelf. But I always buy the books on Audible, and we listen to it together. And even if it takes 2 months to finish a book, that's still 6 months a year the whole team listened to and got to talk about. And I think that goes a long way. And I think it actually sinks in when we could talk about how is this going to change our company? What are we going to do together? Let's make some decisions together. And it's not just me. I say, here's what I got out of that. But I really am curious to see what you guys got out of that and how's it going to change what we do together as a team? What do you guys want to see the difference? And I feel like everybody having a voice, having a stake in the outcome, coming up with their own ideas because they believe their own ideas. If it's my idea, they're not as committed to do it. But a lot of times I lead them down an idea. I go, hey, what can we do that would stop this from happening? I'll say things, but I'll come up with it. And it's fun because they're like, what about, do you want to try this? I'm like, I like that. Let's dig a little bit more into that. And then you can sort of really, I don't want to call it manipulator. I like the word persuade people to do some things that you might want to do. And it's their idea. And trust me, they're all on board if it's their idea. It's a lot easier to get things through the company. And we're making a lot of changes in a good way. And I believe everything needs to be written down. Everything needs to be measured. If it's measurable, it should be measured. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And that book that you mentioned that you held up real briefly, The Four Disciplines of Execution, it's a great book, especially going what you're talking about, which is building a team, having anybody on your team at whatever level you are in the organization, whether you're an owner or even a sales manager, sales leader, and having there be some goal, having everyone come up with their solutions and their accountabilities, and then it's their thing. And then you're holding them to that instead of you dictating and saying, you need to do this and go do this this many times. And then we're going to meet people. Usually, if they don't own it, they're not going to do it in the same way. So I think that's brilliant. And I love the part that you talked about with the Rocket Fuel book. And there's lots of them out there. I mean, when I was on your show, we were talking about the E-Myth Revisited a lot. The biggest challenge for a lot of people is they don't even understand who they are as leaders, as owners, entrepreneurs, even salespeople. They don't understand who they are. They don't understand, like, they're trying to do everything. They're trying to wear all the hats, and they don't realize, like, the visionary come up with the ideas and then stay away from everybody. Because like you said, it's better when you're not there as a visionary because the operational people can actually execute. Otherwise, right, they're going in 1,000 different directions, right? But you need both.
What I've learned is kind of shut up and stay out of the way. I have got a lot of no people around me. No, let's not do that right now. And I really take that. But then again, I got a lot of perfectionists. And I say, I'd rather have it done than perfect. And so there's a happy balancing act I play. And the one thing that I've really tried to do this year is spend a lot more time reflecting. Because as a visionary, I'm thinking 10 years ahead. Who are we going to become? Then I dissect that from the future and then work backwards to today. But I never go to tomorrow and look at yesterday. So I know that's kind of complicated to think about. But I need to spend more time finding the holes and patching those as I'm moving to the company I want to become. There's an author here that I got on my bookshelf, Darren Hardy. He's got this calendar, then he wrote The Compound Effect. He was looking for his perfect girlfriend at the time. He wrote down 100 things about this woman. He wrote down her hair color, the way she smells, the way she's going to be a mother. I mean, 100 attributes. And then he said, where am I going to find this gal? And then he thought about it. He thought about it. And he said, wait a minute. To get a woman like this, I need to write down 100 attributes of who I need to become to get a woman like this. And so he spent all this time writing down 100 things of what a woman like that would look for in a man. And then he worked hard to become that. And I kind of try to do the same thing with my company. Is the company that I want to become. I want to become philanthropist with the company. And I want everybody to feel that same thing, not just Tommy. I want it to be everybody that works here. I didn't mean to go down this whole philanthropy thing, but that's a big piece of who I want to become. Not to mention, I want to do something, you know, people that you look at Elon Musk, it's a sexy business, or Virgin Records, and all these amazing people, or just Steve Jobs. And there's so many people that have changed the world. And it's going to be really hard for me to change the world in a garage door company. I'm like, this is the hand I've been dealt. So I'm going to make it as big and badass as I can. But at the same time, I figure if I could do this for 6 to 8 more years, maybe 10, the crazy thing, and there's something here that I want to talk about. I think it's important because when I found this out, it literally changed my life. See, right now, the way they value a home service company is they look at your EBITDA, which is basically a fancy word for profits, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, or whatever. And it's basically there's add backs and stuff, but it's your profitability and there's a multiplier. So when I buy a company, I might pay 4 times their profit. The day I put it under my platform, it's worth 10, 12, 14, 17 times. So that gap in between, let's say I bought it for 4 times profit, to be simple terms, and I'm worth 10. That 6 times in between was money created out of thin air. And what I love the most about this concept is I could buy companies before I'm ready to take some chips off the table, and I could literally triple the amount of what I bought them for. So the plan is I could go out and buy $200 million worth of companies, and I could actually get $600 million for the same companies as long as it's functioning. But I could also fix them, fix the conversion rate, fix the booking rate on the phones and the online like Yelp, or you're just texting through the internet or email leads. So it's a crazy thing. And the plan is $200 million actually to go out in 4 years and raise $200 million. And then be worth 6 to 8 on the 800 on that. So the point was, is in 8 years, even though it's a garage door company, then I might be able to jump into something because I had a lot of contacts now to maybe do something that will change the world. I might not be go to Mars, may not create a rocket that returns to itself and some of the things these amazing people in the world, but I'd really like to do something that changes the world. And right now we're beautifying homes with, because 40% of your home's curb appeal is your garage door. And it's the only thing that gives you 102% return on investment. That's Remodel Magazine 4 years in a row. It actually will pay you more money than you pay for the garage. It's the only thing on the home, more than your kitchen or your bathroom. So I love the industry. I love garage doors. I'm really passionate about it. But at the same time, I know there's something going to be greater out there and I'm looking forward to it. I'm enjoying the ride more than I'm looking forward to the destination.
Well, and that's always something I ask people, the journey or the destination. So I already know that for you. And I love that you're thinking long-term and not devaluing what you're doing now as that stepping stone, but making the most of it. And obviously saving the world, impacting the world, changing the world through garage doors, like change the world one garage door at a time. I don't know if that's really going to happen, but the impact to your employees and changing their lives. Sometimes it's not always just about the widgets that a company produces, but the people within the company and what is that doing for their lives and their families' lives. And there was something you said, you were talking about the compound effect. And I think the biggest thing for leaders in organizations from the top down in the org chart is one of the things to pick up from what you're talking about and the Darren Hardy story with looking for a mate is you've got to set the tone and be the person that you want everyone else to be. Right? Like nobody long-term wants to work for a hypocrite. The fish stinks from the head down. Like there's all these different ways to spin it. But if you want people to be philanthropic, you want to be it and not just being it because, okay, if I'm this way, they'll follow and I just want to trick them into it. No, like whatever it is that you are doing, they're going to follow. Like I know you love to read. I know you go through stuff like crazy. And so I'm not surprised everyone takes that serious with you because you're passionate about it. You're excited about it. You're not just forcing it. You're not just checking boxes.
I've tried to read the book twice before I let them read it and make sure it's everything. And I'm going to have notes and I'm going to have takeaways and I'm going to have stories. But the stories that they know about, like, who does this remind you of? And they're like, oh my God, I never thought about that. So there's these aha moments. And I'll tell you, I'm stacking the deck on my next book. If I find a way to do things the easy way, I went to rate my professor for all of my pre-dental classes, whether it was organic chemistry, biochemistry. So I was going to be pre-dental. I ended up getting a master's in business because I went and interned with a dentist and he's like, don't do it. He's like, and he's like, get a master's in business first because we don't know anything about business. And then lo and behold, here I am doing garage doors because I fell into that while I was doing my MBA. And I didn't learn a lot about business. I learned a lot more jumping into the reins inside of this business than I've ever learned in the podcast and reading books. But this next book, basically going to pick 40 people, 40 influencers that know how to tell a really great story. And I'm going to pick 10 subjects, recruiting, marketing, sales, 10 different subjects. I'm probably going to pick more than 40, but I'm going to have them give me three stories that impacted their lives. Just earth-shattering, amazing stories. And then I'm going to build a board of 10 people. And we're going to read these stories and we are going to pick a story or two from each that fit into the categories. And then I'm going to comment in between, but I'm going to get the writer. I'm going to work really hard to make these stories like the man in the yellow hat came over, like descriptive, that really leave an impact on that specific part of business. There might be 30, there might be 40, there might be 50 co-authors, and the book writes itself. And then we're going to get on and then we're going to get on a Zoom or whatever it might be. And that's the audible is, hey, I want to hear this story from you and I want to hear the impact. And it needs to follow the same pattern of the book, but maybe not read the exact same way. And then that does the audible. So it's easy to get out. And I think it'll go crazy because I know just the stories that I have, they're funny, they're impactful, they're game changing. I always tell this story about my top technician, number one guy in the company, like by a long shot. He's such an outlier. And the reason he's an outlier is he grew up in Iraq. I mean, the guy had been bombed on when he was a kid. He spent 4 weeks in a bunker. He doesn't have a problem asking. He doesn't feel bad about someone that owns a $500,000 house to ask them to replace something and do things. So he's got the most confidence. He gets 5-star reviews. He's great at everything, like every aspect. It's not just sales. It's getting reviews. It's eye contact. It's everything. So one of my managers in Milwaukee called me. And he said, hey, Tommy, I want my guys to come train with Robin again in Phoenix. And I said, I'm not going to send all the Milwaukee guys out to Phoenix. And he goes, no, one at a time. And I said, okay, well, maybe I could do one better yet. I'll send him out to Milwaukee. And the whole point was, he goes, well, Tommy, that's not going to work because Milwaukee it's not as good as Arizona. The customers don't want to spend money like they do in Phoenix. He goes, you got to put the out there. And so I was like, wait a minute. You think, and he goes, well, look at the average income. And he's talking all this crap. I mean, he was in my head. I mean, I'm like, this is my best guy. So there was a record set in Milwaukee. It was $8,600 in a week. So $8,600 was the best guy ever in Milwaukee.
And that's a what, 2, 3? How many units is that?
So $8,600, you might be the average guy in a week runs 20 calls. So maybe that's a couple doors and a lot of service calls. But this is several years ago. This isn't even the last 2, 3 years. So Robin says, hey, boss, I talked to my wife. I'll go ahead. I'll fly out there. So Mike starts laughing on the phone, my manager, and he goes, I'm going to give him the same exact zip codes. He's not getting any preferential treatment. And I'm like, dude, I don't care what you do. This guy is thebomb.com. So Robin goes out there for a week and he ends up doing $23,500. So pretty much shatters a little bit less than triple the best week ever. And literally his jaw was dropped because I flew out there because my sister lives out there. And he goes, I didn't think this was possible. He goes, this is freaking insane. He goes, I've never in my life. And the Robin's like, I think I want to move to Milwaukee. It was the funniest thing. But the point was, I don't care where someone goes with confidence. You make eye contact. You ask for it. You can put them in the middle of Oklahoma. You can put them in Sandusky, Ohio. You can put them in LA. You can put them in Florida. I'm in 15 states, 23 markets. And I'll send my top guys anywhere. People do change depending on the area. The Midwest is a little bit different than maybe the East and West Coast.
Sure.
But overall, we're all Americans. And I'll tell you this, I beat this fallacy in people's minds over and I'm talking hundreds of times now. I've taken guys because my guys fly all around the country and we've trained other people because we've got, we're up to 300 employees. And I used to think maybe that was a fluke. Maybe Oklahoma's not the same because we're in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. I mean, we're in Wichita. So I send my guys out, same exact thing. It's not the area. It's not because it's a holiday. It's not because COVID-19. It's not because it's tax season. It's not because it's rainy. People build all these false claims in their mind, and it pisses me off. So that's the type of story I would put in the book is just the one time, and it'd probably be in the sales section of like the fallacy in everybody's mind about sales, and they blame everything but themselves. Every other person. Well, you don't understand. You know what I used to hear in Milwaukee? Well, they're all detached garages. It snows. I mean, now we only sell really heavy duty doors because it's the weather beats it up. Sure. So that's the kind of stuff I want to fill the book. That was a long story about the new book, but hopefully the stories are what sell. Stories are what people remember. Stories are what people laugh at. And I think it's going to be pretty impactful.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show.
Well, and I think that story is perfect for this podcast. What I'm curious about is what happened after Robin left, came back, Mike picked his jaw off the floor. What did his team do when it's kind of like the story about the first person to break the 4-minute mile, right? Like nobody thought it was possible. It seemed inconceivable that a human could run a 4-minute mile. And I don't know the stats, but like within months of the first person doing it, tons of people had done it. It was like, oh, that's possible? Oh, okay. Yeah. So what happened in Milwaukee? If did it blow it off? Did everyone just go, yeah?
It was a mind shift because everybody said, it's the people, it's the zip codes we're going to. They're not the same as Phoenix. But when they see it done in their own backyard, all of a sudden it changes the dynamic. So we saw an incredible increase. And about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I came to this conclusion. I started to analyze our numbers and really dig into our KPIs. This is what I did this morning. We call it the morning mojo call. And they're all my sales guys, my technicians. I said, when you go into a home and somebody's got a $69 toilet, it's a 1 foot from the ground. It's small. It won't flush the tiniest of toilet paper. And you put a new plunger system in it to make it go, it's still not going to be a much better toilet. Well, those are the garage doors we're going to. I'm like, it's a tin can. It's literally as thick as a Coca-Cola can. The opener is 15 years old. The trim's messed up. The bottom rubber that keeps all the nasty bugs is bad. The styles are bad. The hinges are messed up. Like, do you feel like fixing this is the best thing for the customer? Do you really feel that way? Because I don't. And I say, you need to look into their soul when you offer them a price and you need to shut the hell up. And you need to give them the price. And this is what I would do for my mom. This is what I tell them. I said, I want you to go to your mom, your grandpa, your uncle that raised you, your best friend's parents, whoever the person you care the most about in your market. And we're going to hook them up with a worry-free. And I want you to explain, and I need you to believe in your heart that that's the number one thing, that that's right for them. It's going to save them money long-term. It's going to save them money on their electricity bill. It's going to improve their curb appeal. It's going to be safe. They're going to know if their garage door is open or closed from their cell phone. They're going to be able to open their garage for anybody that needs to get in, if it's a neighbor, their kid, whatever it might be. They could actually, Amazon does deliveries. The point is, when you look at my customers and they're your customers, and I call them clients, is you need to be able to tell them, this is what I did for the person I love the most. This is what I recommend to you. You want to get this done? I am Tiger Woods when I'm in the garage and when he's on the golf course. I ask a lot of questions. We build rapport. We educate and we follow up. And follow up like crazy. Every single day, my product specialist needs to spend an hour following up or networking. And we monitor all that stuff. Like I said, we got to measure it all. And that's why I feel like we play chess when other people are playing checkers, because they're so living in today versus me being a visionary, thinking about where do we need to go and how are we going to get there? And what kind of processes, systems, standard operating procedures, and checklists could we put in place to make sure this stuff's getting done, measured, and it's impactful. And it's working, and we're having fun doing it.
I think what's so great about that story, and just to drive it home about the toilet and fixing it, but it's still not going to work, the garage door doing some service, but it's got all these problems. And where most salespeople, in your terms, it's the technicians that are selling and doing, but where salespeople feel like sales is something icky and slimy they're doing to somebody instead of something they're doing for somebody and with somebody and what it will actually do. And where if you undersell, which a lot of people do, right? Okay, I'm going to do the service on your garage, but I'm not going to fix or even tell you all of this other dumpster fire of a garage thing you have going on. I think I'm taking the easy way out, non-confrontational. You won't say no, but you're going to be pissed because when it breaks again or it's still garbage in a month or two, you're going to feel got ripped off because I actually didn't tell you everything, right?
Well, you know what? Here's what I do. I got this nice thing here. It's for tithing, okay? You can put up the envelopes here. I got this nice, I pass this around and I say, hey guys, every time you go to church, every time I go to church, the pastor spends 10 minutes selling us on why we got to give 10% to God. So if the church could do it, surely you could understand that you don't have to feel bad because there's no such thing as sales to me. There's a better investment for your home. And that's what I teach the guys. It's not a contract. This is an agreement. These are things that are good for you. And if you believe what I believe, then we'll be fine and everybody wins. But if you believe that this is too much and it's ripping people off and you don't like to upsell, as you call it, then you're never going to win. No one likes to upsell. I hate the word upsell. I get the nasty feeling of, but I said the sales, there's a Daniel Pink book, the sales is to sell is human. And there's a good book called Sell or Be Sold. And if you think about these books, when you meet your lover or your mates, as you will call it, you're selling them. The only people we don't have to sell is our family. I mean, if I have a kid, I don't think I have to sell him that I'm his dad. But everywhere we go, every friend we meet, we're in sales. Believe it or not, they're literally judging you. And I love the book. I've got a million copies of it there, How to Win Friends and Influence People, because we become better listeners and we ask the right questions and we learn. A lot of times guys walk into the garage and I'm using my own industry because I know the most about it is they go, oh, I see what's broken. It's a broken spring. First thing I say is, how long have you lived in the home and how long do you plan on living here? I look for a thermostat. Is it got a smart thermostat? They'll probably want a smart garage door. I look at five things before I even walk into the house. I offer them coffee, a Gatorade, anything I can pick them up on the way because no one ever does that. Weird thing, I smile as much as I can. Then I get them in the garage and I say, oh my gosh, you got a Harley Davidson? I love it. How often do you get out on it? I find something in common with them. Then I say, when was the last time the garage door got looked at? Then I say, tell me what's going on with the garage door. And then you might say it's a piece of crap. I've been wanting to replace this thing for years. I want to get something fancy. My wife wants a full view door. We're getting a brand new car, Mercedes. And it's the same thing. He who talks the most usually loses. And the more we get the customer talking and just that's the building rapport part of it. And then the education part, a lot of the people say, yeah, I could find it cheaper. And I say, yeah, but that's a 10,000 cycle spring. Do you want an 80,000 cycle spring? We could beat the price if the price is what you're into. And a lot of people say no. And when they say no, they don't really mean no. You got to say, no, what makes you say that? Or I need to talk to my husband. Well, what do you think he's going to say? And that's where you're getting right up to the real objection. And whew, I love this stuff. I love it because I live and breathe it every day. And I love talking to the guys about it. And I love coaching them on it because I don't think it's bad. I think we get the least warranty calls. We carry white label parts from different manufacturers. We've got like a Frankenstein of a door. I get parts from all these different manufacturers because I want the best of the best. And I tell people, apples to apples, we'll compete with price, but we don't sell apples here. We sell oranges. And you're not going to find anything like this because no one else carries what we carry. They don't. It's a fact. We've got everything trademarked. You can't carry the same parts we carry. The best one on the market that I've ever found is 25,000 cycles. So in my head, I said, I don't know why. I said, let's three times it and add 5,000. We'll do 80,000 cycles. And that's the best one. Most people are doing 10,000 cycle parts. So people really come to us when they want the best. And people go, well, what about the price shoppers? I go, that's because you're marketing the price shoppers. You're marketing to the crap, the 4% of the whole country that buy on price. But you see, people talk about price because all day long, there's coupons everywhere. There's home advisors saying, have five people compete on price. But realistically, people want the best thing for their home. There's a double blind study with 500 people about garage doors, and price was number 10 on the list. So the people that make it about price usually suck at sales and they should do something else. They should be an office clerk or something to do, maybe work in a warehouse, which is fine. All good jobs. But if you can't look at yourself in the mirror and practice, show your pearly whites, make eye contact, watch your tonality, watch your body language, use the right words, then you're not worth being in the the field of sales.
Since you also work with other business owners, right? Other home service providers and things like that in your various consulting and coaching and things you do. What advice would you give to the ones that are struggling, and or where do you see most of them struggling in general? Not even COVID times. I just mean in general, but you could go either way with that.
So this is an exercise you can do with almost anybody, but you take a business owner and you say, first of all, how much you want to make is where I start with usually. And then I say, where are you at 10%? So you want to make, you're at 5 million, you want to make 10%, you want to make 500,000. And then I say, okay, what's your average ticket? So they're going to start out with 5 million, but forget that number for now. I'll say, what's your average ticket? Okay, it's $474. What's your conversion rate when you're face to face? Oh, when we're face to face, we're hitting about 63%. And I'll go back into this in a minute. And then your call center, we're booking 70% of all the calls that come in. And then how much does it cost for you to acquire a customer? So they might say $93. First of all, the first problem I see in every single company I've ever worked with is they don't have their KPIs, the key performance indicators. Their numbers are not correct. They have no software to monitor them. They don't have any checks and balances. Basically, it's a number they pull out of their rear. So I take that and I look at the industry averages. I'm not happy with 70%, even though in home service, it's 43% as a cumulative. I'm not happy with 63% conversion rate, but it depends on if it's service or sales. I want to be 90 plus in service, and in sales, I want to be 60% plus. And the average acquisition cost is I need to dig into your market and understand, what are you doing for marketing? Number one thing is you want to build your online reputation. How do you do that? I can go into that, but build your online reputation. I have KPIs I hit before I go into the fourth step of marketing, which is the branding. First, I do direct response. But the brand is expensive. TV, radio, billboards still work. They'll help you convert. Your ValPak coupons will do better. Your Yelp will do better. Your Google ads, your LSA, your pay-per-click, your Google organic, your SEO. But I got to dig into these main four numbers. And I got to help you get set up with how you're going to get these numbers, because you got to inspect what you expect. And your numbers are broken. They'll say they're at 70%. I'll say, show me how. Then I'll listen to a couple of calls. And they're like, oh, that one didn't count because that was a bad service area. Well, here's my problem. If that doesn't count, it might make you look bad for a week. But I need to stop marketing in a service area that we're not marketing in. So if I'm in a ValPak zone that's hitting the wrong zip codes and we don't have service there, you're not helping me at all, because I'm not going to be able to detect that because that didn't count and I can't dig into it. So I want to have everything to where there's no gray. It's got to be black and white. And these numbers got to be concrete. They're called key performance indicators, and they should be the lifeblood of your company. And it should be in your CRM. And there's different CRMs out there, but my CRM does a lot of this stuff. And then we have checks and balances. We A-B test certain things. We don't check everything. We pick 1 out of 10 in a lot of cases, or 1 out of 5 in the different segments of the business. And if we catch you lying or cheating, you will be written up. And on the third one, you shouldn't work here because you're obviously trying to cook the numbers. Everybody's paid for performance here. So we look at a random one, and I dig into ones myself sometimes that look odd. And I don't catch rarely anybody lying. When we do inventory, we only inventory 5 major parts, but we keep it random. And if you're off, possibly it could be a little error. But if you're constantly off, especially on a big item, we're going to write you up for it because you're trying to deceive us. But I don't like the stick as much as I like the carrot. I like to give people, like, our employee of the month is a giraffe. The reason it's a giraffe is because you got to stand tall. You better stick your neck out for the company. And the third thing is they got the biggest hearts because they got to pump all that blood up to their brain. So those are the KPIs. Rarely do people understand their numbers. They don't know where to spend their time. They don't understand that they got to measure these things. And then most of the time, they're paying way too much for acquisition. They're not booking enough phone calls. The conversion rate sucks because there's no coaching or accountability. And then their average ticket sucks because the conversion rate sucks and they're not getting the right customers. So it's this wicked thing that happens when just one thing's off. So I learned how to dig into the biggest problem first, the biggest hole in the boat. And slowly but surely, over the course of a few months, I could usually help fix them all. They just need to open their eyes. And then most of them aren't really good leaders, so they need to hire a sales coach or someone to be the cheerleader that's passionate, that could keep their attention. Those are the things I love to do. So I think that, in a nutshell, is the biggest mistake I see in most businesses.
And I couldn't agree more. I am always astounded by businesses I would think is successful by the numbers, especially by top-line revenue, and how literally out of control they are. How they have no idea what's going on. They have no metrics. They have no idea. I'm at a home servicing company last year, was doing $20 million a year on spreadsheets, was their business process. At least they had spreadsheets. Some don't even have that, but I was just amazed. Shifting a little bit, what does it mean to you when you hear the word authentic?
Authentic. To dig into that word, it means being real. It means that I'm genuinely, a lot of people automate a lot of stuff. I write a lot of handwritten cards. I put in a lot of stuff that we're building a list of a top 100 clients in every single city. And we're going to send authentic gifts from the heart to be top of mind awareness. And genuinely, I took out my top client. He spends $1 million a month or a year with us. And me and him had a great conversation. We had a couple of martinis. We talked for 3 hours. The guy's a genius. And I literally was like laughing and I'm writing. I had my phone with me. So I'm taking notes and notes and notes. And I said, Tommy, what could I have done better this year? And he said, Tommy, two things. My son tried to call and whatever line we called, it didn't work. And I realized somehow he got put out of the do not call list in our phone system, which I don't know how that happened, but we fixed that. And then another one was he was having some issues with it, two openers at one of his properties. One of the properties had some stuff stolen, so we wrote them a check and fixed it. But he said, other than that, he goes, Tommy, you know what I want you to do? I want you to raise the prices. He goes, metal's going up. He goes, I still need you to answer the phone when I call like you do. And he goes, number two, he goes, I need you to keep your schedule because you're the best I've ever seen at keeping a timeline. And time is money because I got to get the rent rolls where I need them to be. And I literally have investors that count on me. Time is more important than a few bucks. So you keep delivering me quality installs with a quality product on a certain timeline, and I'll take care of you. Don't mind about the price. And that to me meant the world, just to hear my biggest client saying, raise my prices. And he didn't care that he was a big client. He just wanted to have a real talk. And he literally used to work at Hewlett Packard in 96. He was working on building the intranet and growing the infrastructure. And he taught me all these lessons about getting lean and process and continue to refine the process to lower the amount of time and get it lean. And I mean, he's teaching me all these things and I'm like, man, I'm a sponge. I'm just like, I'm giggling.
I can imagine.
Ooh. So it was great.
I could totally see you 3 hours over martinis in your phone. People might think you're texting somebody. You're just taking notes. You're just entering it into something.
I went over it all with him and he's like, wow, you took a lot. I'm like, no, this stuff's gold, man.
Gold.
I still got the notes and I'm like, you know what would be crazy? And his name's Lauren. He's from Canada. He's from Toronto. And he says, what would be crazy, Tommy? And I said, if my biggest client led one of our sales meetings. I said, because you literally, the things that you've taught me while we sat down here, we talked about politics. We talked about, he has me reading two other books right now. And I ordered the books right in front of him and made sure it's the right books. And he goes, this is going to change your whole viewpoint on the world climate we're in right now and everything. And I'm like, no, this is exactly like he's been through a lot of the stuff. And he says, Tommy, I'm here. This whole trip is to spend time with family, but I wanted to make sure I saw you. I'm like, I felt really good about that. And he made 3 hours to see me when he's only here for a couple of weeks and it's all family time. And I think sometimes maybe in his head, maybe I remind him of a kid or his kid or something.
Maybe.
Kind of treats me like a father sometimes. It's a good thing.
I love it. What about when you hear the word persuasion or you think about persuasion in your success in your processes?
Persuasion, I think of a guy named Robert Cialdini in a book called Influence and How to Persuade People. And I think about the story. He's an ASU professor in psychology. And this story is awesome. Is this little boy, he's walking down the campus and this little boy and his dad walk up and he goes, hey, I'm trying to make some money for my Boy Scout trip. And I got these raffle tickets. Would you buy a couple for $25? And Robert Cialdini goes, no, sorry, I don't have that cash on me. And he goes, well, if you won't buy the raffle tickets, will you at least buy two candy bars? They're $2 a piece. And he goes, sure, he buys the candy bars. And he sits back down at his desk. Robert Cialdini does. And he is the guy that wrote the book Influence. And he goes, I don't even like chocolate. And this kid sold me two candy bars. And the moral of the story is it's hard for people to say no twice. Persuasion is really, he really nails it on the head in the book Influence. It's really how to persuade and influence people. And the same thing about how to win friends and influence people. It's just, it's learning to listen. It's learning to make eye contact. It's body language. It's confidence. And persuasion is key to get people to follow you. You look at Genghis Khan or Alexander the Great, or even, I hate to say this, but Hitler at a certain time
sure.
was able to get people to follow him. And I think that the certain attributes, and I don't really study Hitler, but I study some of the guys back in the day. Genghis Khan was by far the biggest and best. And then you've got the different Caesars. But they have the ability to lead. They have the ability to speak. They have the ability to make eye contact. They have the ability to make sure that every single person in the audience is getting what they're laying out. So they feel like the speaker's talking to them, and it hits them at home. It's emotional. It's funny. It makes you climactic, maybe slows down, makes you think, and then makes you excited at the end. And they know how to really pick the right words. And I think a lot of it is body language.
I think that's great. And I think with any leader, anyone whose goal is to persuade and lead, it ultimately just comes down to the direction. Where are they going? What are their intentions? Because it's one of those things, right? Like, you can use that power for good or evil and be very effective at it. It's where you're going with it. Tommy, thanks for coming on here. This has been so fun. This is totally what I expected, totally what I wanted, and totally not on any of the topics I thought we were going to cover, which I absolutely love. Just have to have you come back and theoretically attempt to go through stuff. So for people who want to get in touch with you, want to see what you're doing, want to pick up everything you're putting down, whether they're in home services or in business in general. So your websites, you have A1garage.com, homeservicemillionaire.com, which is for the book, homeserviceexpert.com, which is the podcast, and then tommymello.com, which is your own personal site. That covered for now?
And then the cool thing is the book has 12 co-authors. I really took a lot of time on this first book, and I had the CEO of Service Titan, the CEO of a home advisor. You learn how to sell your business. You learn how to have a financial quick check. You learn all about manuals. The co-authors are all smarter than me in the book. And we decided to just make it, sell it for free and pay for the shipping. I lose money on it. It's $9. It's a hardcovered book. It's about 200 pages, but you go to homeservicemillionaire.com/either free or success. That'll both get you to the link to just pay for the shipping and handling. And it's on Audible. And I personally like the Audible because I can speed it up. And I read it myself and I had fun doing it. So,
yeah, I just finished that. Mine's coming out soon for Selling with Authentic Persuasion. And yeah, that was quite the experience. Toughest part was listening to it again to catch all the editing stuff, which I don't enjoy hearing myself. But Tommy, thanks for joining me, recording this right before Christmas. Thanks for taking time out of the parties and all the cultural stuff you have going on with the business and sharing this with everybody who needed this, whoever in sales or running a business, home service or not. So I appreciate you and this gift for the audience. So thank you.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.